Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of The Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
All the pomp and panoply of a legendary era is breathtakingly revealed before your unbelieving eyes as Entertainment Ventures Incorporated, mighty monarch of the exploitation film world, proudly presents the epical event in adult motion pictures, The Long Swift Sword of Siegfried. We love our legends and our heroes. Nevertheless, we suspect that when they weren't out slaying those stupid, clumsy, fire-breathing dragons, the good and glorious knights of old climbed out of their cast-iron jumpsuits and perhaps did a little number with the available local pussycats. But we sure can't censure them for that. Not the way it all hangs out nowadays. So we'll sing of Siegfried and tell it like it is. Or was. And how we'd like to think it was, because it was more fun that way. These four screen luminaries head an international cast of thousands in the first multi-million dollar adult super spectacle, The Long Swift Sword of Siegfried. Cannot describe its magnitude. The Long Swift Sword of Siegfried.
Hello, it is 28 minutes after the hour of one in this, the month of... Now I just want to do everything like that guy again. It's going to be my life's goal to assemble every adult and exploitation trailer that guy voiced. I was just rooting around in my stuff last night because we've got a... we got a snuff watch coming up later on today in the radio program today. Is it David B. Friedman?
David F. Friedman.
David F. Friedman, who is the impresario behind such adult fare as The Erotic Adventures of Zorro.
And Blood Feast.
A classic. Who was it that called that? The Citizen Kane of gore films. But Blood Feast. but he just did his whole laundry list of exploitation films, which were not quite mainstream movies, but not quite actual porn. Not quite... B-movies, because B-movies sort of intended... B-movies, you got the sense that they wanted to make a big-budget film and they just couldn't quite pull it off. Whereas exploitation films sort of knew what they were, I think, in a way that B-movies sort of didn't. But he was one of the kings of the exploitation film. And I was rooting around at all my David F. Friedman trailers last night, and I knew at one point, but had completely forgotten until last night, that I owned the trailer for The Long Swift Sword of Siegfried.
And Siegfried is coming in today, so he will, I'm assuming, bring his long, swift sword with him.
Oh, yeah. Will he ever? In any event, so we'll get that later on. We got a snuff watch coming up today, penis watch, corpse watch, taser watch, and more. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program, broadcasting to you live from high above the Milkpacking District here in glorious southeast Portland, Oregon. Thank you for joining us. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, America's new home for quality. Let's see what else we have. Mr. Aaron Mesh is going to be joining us from Willamette Week later on this hour. Also, yes, Siegfried will be here to talk about the Portland International Film Festival. And our good friend Aaron Duran with The Week in Geek. So that's all on the way. We got your Week in Geek, Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. We've got Siegfried talking about the Portland International Film Festival, Snuff Watch, Penis Watch, Corpse Watch, Chaser Watch, and then, wait, right here. Not so much here. or here, but here.
Right there.
Right there. I hold in my hands news of such magnitude and might that it, in fact, my voice can barely be heard. Through just the length and girth and width of this news.
The long, swift sword of news.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. Well, there's no other kind. So I've got here, it's sort of an ad hoc Geek Watch. It's one part Twilight, one part RoboCop.
There's almost too much stuff to cram into the day.
But that's not going to stop us from trying, Don. It's adversity in the face of certain defeat, or defiance in the face of certain something else. It's something that's in the face of a second thing. Doesn't really matter. It is 503-505-6964 if you'd like to join us today. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. That is rick@rickemerson.com. Don Taylor can be emailed at don@rickemerson.com. That is don, D-A-W-N, @rickemerson.com. Text box on the website open. You can also Skype if you like. That is Rick Emerson Show via Skype. That's how you do that. That is Rick Emerson Show via Skype, so forth. Plus, Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this fine Wednesday.
Well, got a gruesome murder, and you know how I love one of those. An inmate who hid 30 items in his rectum.
Rectum? I was just asking for clarification.
Yes. And an ecstasy safety flyer, which is criticized as a how-to guide for ravers.
Excellent. By the way, you know who one of the stars of the long, swift sword of Siegfried is?
No.
I was giggling about this because I'm five at the top of the hour just now between Legion of News and this show. I was just over here sort of cackling to myself, and you kind of looked up with that eyebrow like, what's so funny there, Mr. Funny Pants Man? One of the stars of the long, swift sword of Siegfried?
Mm-hmm.
Peter B. Hard.
Oh. Now, is that Peter B.?
Yes.
Hard?
Yeah, as in like Bob or Bill.
Oh.
And it actually says on the screen as you're watching the long, swift sword of Siegfried, you know, the trailer. And they're doing that. And, of course, not unlike the Erotic Adventures of Zorro, which now I feel like I have to play at some point in the show again. Because really, there's never a bad moment to do that. They're doing that. There's sort of faux, like it's almost like it's Ben-Hur or something, but these like faux Cecil B. DeMille style trailers or credits where they just sort of come up on the screen and the huge, you know, shocking, amazing, thrill-packed. And as he's naming off all of the stars and starlets who are appearing in the movie, their names are appearing on the screen and just this huge, like, 1,000-point type, and it just says, Peter B. Hard, in huge letters. That right there, that's worth the entire... That's what technology is for. That really is why the film was invented, Don. That's why God gave us the gift of celluloid, so we could just, you know. And
that's why we have the art of cinema.
In a strange way, I mean, I'm not saying that I would even do it now, but in a strange way, I feel like I just missed a quintessential part of the American experience by not existing in a time when you would go to a theater to watch the Erotic Adventures of Zorro or the Long Swift Sword of Siegfried.
Yeah.
Or you know, whatever. Or your more plainly erotic fare like Behind the Green Door. I just. I guess you could do it now. I mean, I guess they still got...
It's a little weird, though, because I've seen X-rated movies in theaters, and...
But do they even really exist,
weird.
Like, actual porn theaters anymore? I mean, where you go and you sit down in a seat and on the screen is, you know, the action?
I don't know. I don't know.
I can't imagine the big money now.
Because we did have the one here in town for a long time, but it's closed down.
I think there's one here, but it's basically just a hump joint. I mean, I think it's. Yeah. I think it is more. I think it's just become a. It's like a, it's become like a swing. Isn't that the Paris Theater? Isn't the Paris now? I mean, it's presumably an adult theater, but I think it's basically like a swingers club, and the adult theater is just sort of. I'm not saying it's a front, but it's just. You know, it's like they call it a theater, but it's really. It's like when they call something a bathhouse, but there's not a lot of bathing going on.
Yeah. When I was going to culinary school, there was an adult theater across the street. This was at like 17th and... I don't know, but where the Western Culinary Institute used to be. And the Jefferson Theater, that was it.
I think the Jefferson Theater is still there. I'm almost certain it's still operational, but I don't know that they show a lot of... I don't know they do a lot of actual movie showing there. I think it has become a sort of...
It's become kind of a weird performance art swing club S&M parlor or something, hasn't it?
I think it's like half porn store, half Ace of Hearts.
Yeah.
With like a dash of, a dash of something else thrown, a dash of like Jim Rose circus sideshow or something. I don't know, because I've never been there.
But when I was going to culinary school, it was still just like they showed movies and such, and I guess they had video areas. I never went inside.
An arcade.
But there was a, it was opposite the corner where the bake shop area was, and that was where you'd go out to smoke cigarettes. And there was a sign that always intrigued me. I always wanted to go into the theater to talk to them about it, because there was a sign that said they had free coffee and donuts before 10 a.m. And I thought to myself, I was just really curious if to that was really an incentive.
Like that was the deciding factor to people?
Yeah, like you're thinking, I'm going to go watch dirty movies and masturbate today. But, you know, if I go now, I'll get a free donut. And the thing is, do you have the donut before or after?
I think before.
So you're standing around in the lobby enjoying a hot cup of coffee and a donut and just making small talk before you, like, with the concessions person or the ticket taker before you go in to watch your porn? Wouldn't you be eager to get to your porn?
Well,
I
suppose
it's all... I would think you would want the donut afterwards as sort of a satisfying...
like a sort of a cigarette after,
to celebrate
your recent revitalization.
But mostly, I just was fascinated with it as a sales technique. That like, you know, well, you know, business is slow before 10 a.m., but we'll really get them in if we give them donuts.
See, I was wondering. See, I didn't even really think about it being like a trying to get them in before 10 a.m. Like maybe that's the slack part of the day. That's where business sags a little bit. I was thinking that maybe they were just trying to compete with other adult emporiums. You know, it's like, well, hey, what is to separate you from Mr. Spanky's? And then somebody says, well, do they have coffee and donuts? Look at this. And you say, my God, no. So it's like when you go to the bank and they give you a toaster for opening an account.
I also would think that if people are coming in to do that, giving them a cup of hot coffee is really a lawsuit waiting to happen.
Well, that's what I'm saying before. You probably want to finish your coffee and donut beforehand. Because let's be honest, are the donuts where other patrons can freely use their hands to be rooting around looking for the best one?
That's the other thing. You don't want just a big open box of donuts.
No, you don't.
So does that mean you have to ask the I would like my free donut? Now,
one
do
donut,
they just
please.
Hand you the donut as you walk in?
And really, are you trusting the guy behind the counter to be handing
a
donut? Because that's probably the guy that's got to go in and scrub the joint afterward.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems ill-advised.
And if you eat the donut first, I mean... Are you going to have sticky sugar hands?
Well,
you know,
I think that might be the least of your worries, really.
Yeah.
Sticky sugar hands.
Honest to God, though, I had...
Sticky sugar hands is my clowning name.
But you can see why I had so many questions about this promotion.
Seriously, I'm going to start a whole line of clown porn. It's just called Sticky Sugar Hands, A World of Delight. Oh, that's fantastic. All right, the whole program is worth it just for that. Sticky sugar hands.
Sticky
I'm writing that down. Kids, I'm sticky sugar hands. Welcome to my place. All right. We already do the headlines.
And by place, you mean van.
Yes, I do. And by welcome, I mean don't make any noise or I'll kill this puppy.
Yes, we did the headline.
Okay. It's 503-505-6964. Can I just tell you, speaking of soundproof vans and children, let me just say
as
this.
As we do.
As we do often. Can I tell you... Here's a thing that I am unable to do. So I have this shirt from our friends in Womb Stretcher the Magnificent, local hip hop impresarios and artists. And
I'm sorry, could you repeat that again?
I have this shirt from local hip hop collective Womb Stretcher the Magnificent.
Womb Stretcher.
Stretcher. You know all about Womb Stretcher, don't you?
No, I don't believe...
What?
I believe I...
How is that possible?
I would remember if I had heard the name Womb Stretcher before.
Oh, now I'm just totally derailed. Now I feel like I got to go back. Now we have to go back and do like a whole sort of preamble. This is like the beginning of Lord of the Rings, like the third installment where you got to wrap up the first... You got to recap like the last 9 hours of action. You don't know what? Okay, well, never mind.
No, I don't.
Okay, well, I feel now like it's. I should just put a pin in this, and we can just talk about it another time. So there's this group in Portland, and they're called Womb Stretcher. That's WOMBSTRETCHA, the Magnificent, and their listeners, unsurprisingly. And they're I won't go so far as to call them hit singles, but some of their more adventuresome compositions include Soundproof Van and Shake It Like a Baby.
Okay, I have heard you mention those before. I guess I somehow managed to gloss over the fact they were called womb stretchers.
They exist in a genre that they themselves created and named. It's a genre they call date rap.
Okay.
And anyway, so one of my most prized possessions is a womb stretcher, the magnificent shirt featuring the aforementioned soundproof van right in the front. And the thing is, Lara won't let me wear it anywhere that she's going to be. So I think I've probably worn that shirt maybe once in the last year and a half, 2 years. Because it's like every time I get ready to put it on, she just looks over and she says, "You are not wearing your womb stretcher shirt. Just put it back on the shelf." And very rarely does my wife ever just put her foot down about anything. She's actually very good about that. She lets me exercise what our friends in the Mormon church would call free agency. So self-determination. But that is the shirt that she simply will not allow me to wear out of the house if I'm going to be anywhere where she will be seen or where, God forbid, there's going to be like any of her friends or anybody who knows her. But every now and again, I feel like I've just got to wear it to the studio just, you know, because why not? Free shirt, soundproof van, womb stretcher. Hey. But the thing is, like, she's psyched me out about it now. It's like she's just gotten in my head. Or I feel like that if I were to, like, it's like making it rain by washing your car. I feel like if I leave the house with the womb stretcher shirt on, that's going to be the day that Joe Biden is in town or something and offers to come by and just sort of be a guest on the show. And it all goes really, really well until somebody, one of his advance men, comes by and sees me wearing a shirt that says womb stretcher on it. And then they just decide to take him over to KPAM or something instead. So, anyway, I don't even know what I'm talking about now. But I'll wear it tomorrow.
Okay.
What's tomorrow, Thursday?
Yeah.
Womb stretcher.
Gonna totally wear my...
Is Anna Griffin coming in? Because she'll appreciate that.
Oh, God, no. You see, you're right. See, now that's the thing is, like, I would have... I'm glad you mentioned that because I would have totally done it. And then I would have had to turn it inside out or put up like some sort of a zippy like a sweatshirt thing over it. I'll wear it Friday when Big Jim is here.
Yeah,
he's a man offended by nothing.
He will appreciate that.
And here's the other thing about the guys in Womb Stretcher. First of all, they have a great logo. Have you ever seen the logo for Womb Stretcher the Magnificent?
No.
Okay, I'll find it during a break and I'll show it to you. Every time also that I go to my father's place, which is one of my favorite greasy spoons here in Portland, every time I go there, the guys in Womb Stretcher are always sitting at the table to my immediate left. I don't know why. It's like they just, either they never go home and they're just, like, they live there or something, or it's just, or the universe just wants us to be together, or there's some sort of a bat signal that goes up in the sky when I leave the house. But I'm always going to my father's place and I sit down, and it's like that thing of, like, they'll rack focus to the back of the room, and I look over and it's like, there's the guys in Womb Stretcher just sitting there having, like, having coffee and a nosh. It's all very strange. All right, well, in any event, it's 503-505-6964, Sticky Sugar Hands. I don't have anything else to say except that we're not going to have time to do this as a full Geek Watch, so I'm just going to, I'll read these two stories right out of the gate before we get to the news, and then we got Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette. We're going to be joining us, our good friend Siegfried. We got the Week in Geek coming up, Penis Watch, Corpse Watch, Taser Watch. Let's read these two things. Ooh, and I'll also say this. This is the first time this particular thing, a little technological mishap, happened to me yesterday. The first time I've actually done this. Now, everybody, you've done the butt dialing thing where you're like, you'll sit on your phone and you bump the phone or you got like the, like, I don't ever turn the voice command on because that voice command just seems like an accident waiting to happen.
Yeah.
The voice command seems like a thing where it's like you're going to be cursing somebody's name or just complaining about them and your phone will misinterpret that as like you want to call their home.
My goddamn mother. Oh, you want me to call your mother?
Exactly. And it's like you won't really. The voice command I will actually do now and again. Like, I don't leave it on as a matter of course. Like, I don't just have the voice command, you know, the voice dial just permanently enabled because it seems like that really is just like you're just tempting fate. But I will do it now and again if I'm in traffic and I don't want to be that guy who's like looking down and trying to find somebody's number. So I'll click that, you know, it's like if I have the headphones, I'll click that button on the headphones and I will just say like, I'll just say like, you know, call Cheryl's cell phone. And then the phone creepily just says, calling Cheryl's cell phone, which just sort of weirds me out.
Yeah.
Even now, I mean, I know that we passed this point with technology like 7 or 8 years ago where it knows how to do that, but it just doesn't seem like it ought to be possible. And so the fact that it is, it just continues to sort of freak me out in some low-grade way. But I got the I got the iPhone 4, and I don't know if you're, you got the 3GS, does it do the FaceTime thing with the video phone?
No.
Okay, so the iPhone 4 has this thing called FaceTime, which I guess is going on all sort of Apple products in the future. But it's like the video chat, like the Jetsons told us we would have.
Yeah.
And so I accidentally did the butt dialing yesterday, but it wasn't just butt calling. I was butt FaceTiming somebody, which is a strange sort of a phrase.
So they answered the phone, and then they were just looking at your ass?
Looking at my ass, and it was Bill Oakley, executive producer for The Simpsons. And so I hear this, like, bing, bing in my pants. And that's never a good sign. I mean, that just, well, unless it means the cinnamon rolls
never.
Are done.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, that's strange. And so it's like I'm in traffic, and I was like leaning, and it was like I don't carry the phone in my back pocket. I carry it in my front pocket. But it was like it somehow got shifted around or something, and it's like I had turned at some point. Maybe it was like getting something out of the glove box or something, but it's like I had leaned in just the right way, and the phone got compressed, and it pressed a button, and I heard like a bing bing, and I was like, well, and then I was like having to change lanes, and I was, you know, trying to reach into my pants to get the phone up, but then it's like the light turns green, and I didn't really, so it's like the bing bing happens, and then there's like 45 seconds between that and me being able to fish the phone out of my pocket. And then I just realized that I've turned on the webcam and the FaceTime, and I have called Bill Oakley with my ass, or with the side of my junk. I mean, I guess to be more accurate about it. Which is, and then you just got to wonder if he was actually just like staring at his phone, because he has the iPhone 4 as well. And so it's like if you call somebody with that and they don't have an iPhone, it doesn't really matter because it's just going to ring through as like a regular call, or maybe it just doesn't go through it again. But if you call somebody who has that, It's like receiving in, you know, on screen, and you're receiving an incoming video transmission from Rick Emerson's scrotum, which is not a thing you really anticipate. Like, it's not, no. You know, you don't wake up in the morning and think, what does the day hold for me? You know, Rick Emerson's ass will be calling me and putting itself on screen in my pocket. Like, when would you anticipate that? Like, never. So, anyway, it's just, I'm telling you right now, if you got an iPhone, you just beware of that. That's the first time it's happened, but it may not be the last. So just be on guard.
All right. I'm imagining you with cinnamon rolls in your pants.
Let's see. Just a couple of brief stories here, and then we'll get to the actual news desk. First of all, and I want to thank the many, many people who sent this to me, including our good friend Keelan, who beat everybody out of the... he was the first out of the gate with this. This is from UPI. Proponents of erecting a statue of RoboCop in Detroit.
Yay!
A suggestion first tweeted to the mayor. So they have raised $20,000.
All right.
The saga of the statue began last week when Mayor Dave Bing's Twitter account responded negatively to a tweet about the idea of the city honoring the fictional robotic protagonist of the 1987 film RoboCop with a statue. Supporters who are using Kickstarter.com in their fundraising efforts, that is Kickstarter.com, say they have to March 26th to reach their goal of $50,000 of the money's returned to the donors, the Detroit News reported Tuesday. Jerry Pfaffendorf, a leader of the RoboCop statue campaign, I love this country, said he has given thought to the ethics of funding a campaign for a statue that wouldn't be entirely serious, but he believes the energy created by the movement could spill over to other charitable causes. Plus, it's righteous. So we're going to try to get this guy on the phone.
Yeah.
Jerry Pfaffendorf, leader of the RoboCop statue committee. $20,000. Let's see what else. Marathon, Florida. Authorities say a Florida teen has told police that bite marks on her body did not come from someone who attacked her while she was jogging, but from a Twilight-inspired role-playing game.
Oh.
And I think they mean role-playing game not in the, you go into a darkly lit cavern, but I think they made it in the whole, the key word, you know, the safe word is guava, if this starts to hurt too much, sort of a sense. The South Florida Sun Sentinel reports the Monroe County Sheriff's Office has charged the 15-year-old girl with making a false report. Authorities say the girl is a fan of the vampire-based Twilight movies and books. The Sheriff's Office say the girl had engaged in, quote, fantasy biting with a 19-year-old man in August. And worried her mother would see the marks. She told her mother she'd been attacked while jogging, probably by a number one male.
It doesn't sound like it was fantasy biting. It sounded like it was actual biting.
Yeah. No charges have been filed against the 19-year-old man. Well, because how could you? I mean, yeah. This is like, what are you going to charge him with?
Yeah.
So, there you go. So the hot chicks all into biting now? I mean, more than they were before?
No, the idiot girls who love Twilight are into biting.
No, but see, you say that they can't also be hot chicks.
They could be, but there, I think, are... I think that hot Twilight chips are a subset of hot chips in general.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, it's a... I mean, because they're just... I mean, these are...
There have always been women who like being bit.
I mean, they're just chunky goth chicks, like they always are, but it sounds like now they just are into... they're into having you masticate on them, which, you know, I mean, whatever. I guess maybe... the thing about that is, like, you've always... It's not like you have to go to Hot Topic to buy teeth. I mean, you sort of got the tools with you all the time. It's not like she wants you to come over to her house with a silver chalice full of lamb's blood or something.
Being bitten can be delightful in the right circumstances.
I'm just saying, is it a thing that's... Here's what I'm asking is this a thing that is actually becoming a trend, or is it a thing that they're just sort of claiming is becoming a trend?
I think they're claiming it's a trend. I think the whole being into Twilight and being into vampires thing has become something of a trend. So well, I think that, you know.
Now, is it, but, and has it become, is that more prevalent now than it was, or is it just receiving more mainstream attention? Because it's like every goth chick I knew just had like a whole Anne Rice library at her house and just sat around with like red candles lit in her her curtain-drawn bedroom.
Yeah, but, you know, Twilight sold so huge that I think Twilight...
Are these Twilight moms?
I don't want to... I really don't intend this pun. I really don't. But Twilight seems to have eclipsed the many of the previous... there have always been chicks that are into vampires, but the Twilight phenomenon is so huge. I think that there are a lot of young ladies who would not be into vampires otherwise. They wouldn't have stumbled across it otherwise. Because a lot of the Twilight fans aren't necessarily goths. They're just girls... You know, they're girls that would otherwise be reading like Harlequin romances.
I'm just wondering if you're a teenage boy, if this is yet another variable that you have to factor into your fumbling, stumbling, woefully inept sexual skill set.
Oh yeah.
You know, when you're going through, because I mean, it's bad enough you got to figure out how to unhook a bra or whatever. You know, and how to not have your voice crack at inopportune moments. But now you have to worry. You know, some chick's going to ask you to bite her, and that's like a whole. I mean, it's not like biting itself is all that difficult, but it seems like this is a specialized kind of biting. And yeah. So are you going to have to? Is it yet one more thing that you will have to practice in your off hours?
Yes, you should be at home practicing biting on the back of your hand.
You know,
in your room,
kids. You can practice biting a friend. It doesn't make you gay. As long as you're thinking about a girl when you do it, you're still all man. All right. I'm not going to read this. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here's Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
We should note, by the way, that today's program is brought to you by EH Vending. Yes. And because of those fine folks, we'll be presenting clue number 3 in the Name That Snack contest for this week. Here is Don Taylor at the news desk.
A homeless man went to court and was arrested on Friday, but the notable part of the story is what he had hidden in his rectum as he stood before the judge.
Should I guess?
Sure.
I mean, is it something that, will I ever guess what it is? It's not like, you know, well, the Magna Carta.
It's more like a scavenger hunt. How many of the things could you guess?
Okay, well, now I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming it was drugs.
Okay, sure. 17 round blue pills.
A condom. In the wrapper.
Actually, the condom was what all of the stuff was in.
Oh, I see. So he put it all inside of a condom, and then the condom...
Right.
It's like a sort of in the house that Jack built kind of
yes.
thing. Let's see. Car keys.
No.
Poker chips.
Oh, yeah. No, and by the way, your previous answer was right. There was an additional unused condom inside the condom.
Okay, by the way, and I should say, I haven't read this story. I don't know anything about it. That was a flat-out guess.
There you go.
Okay, car keys?
No.
Poker chips.
No.
Something to eat later if he got tired, you know, or needed additional energy.
No.
Okay. Let's see. A mini bottle of whiskey.
No.
Okay. No, I think I'm done guessing.
Okay. The condom in his rectum contained 17 round blue pills, 1 cigarette, 6 matches, a flint. I guess, you know, in case...
He's a survival knife.
In case he gets a...
He's one of those Rambo knives with the hollow handle. Does he have a... Was there a compass as well if you turn him over?
There was also a empty syringe with an eraser over the needle, so he was
safety conscious. Safety first.
1 lip balm container, 1 additional unused condom, a receipt from CVS Pharmacy, and a coupon.
Well, maybe he didn't have... maybe he didn't have pockets.
I guess, I mean, you know.
He was homeless, yeah. You say?
He was homeless, so I guess that's where he kept his valuables.
Well, this is one of those things where, like, normally it would go in that little jockey box or whatever, that thing that's like to the, you know, that little junk box between the two seats. But if you don't have that, it's like any port in a storm.
Right. So he's now facing charges that he possessed a drug and tobacco product inside the jail.
Yes, well, I mean, he can't really argue that he didn't. Okay. An eraser on the end of the syringe.
Yeah.
That's interesting. It's almost like it was like he sat and just looked at his life and inventoried, the contents of his pockets or
what
his.
What are the bare essentials?
And said, like, really, all things being equal, where can I store all of this stuff? It wasn't like he did it rashly. It sounds like he actually did arrive at something. He had some sort of a flowchart in his head and he came to a logical conclusion this really was where he was going to carry everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There you go. We have a corpse watch.
All right. Here's your corpse watch for Wednesday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
I'm digging up bones. I'm digging up bones. Exhuming things that's better left alone. I'm resurrecting memories of love that's dead and gone. Yet tonight I'm sitting alone, digging up bones.
Here is Don Taylor with your Corpse Watch.
Rescuers this week in Florida saved a man.
Sorry, where?
Florida. Saved a man and a boy suffering from chemical fume exposure in a pesticide truck, and then found a corpse in a bag stuffed between containers of hazardous chemicals in the back of the truck. The truck belongs to a company called C&J Pest Control, which is based out of a house in Westwood Lakes. Police, who were treating the case as a homicide, rushed to the home last night. Story began about 7 a.m. when a road ranger in West Palm noticed a maroon pickup truck stopped in the shoulder of the road. Police and firefighters found two seriously ill passengers inside, 53-year-old George Barahona and 10-year-old Victor Vachter, who was suffering from seizures.
Victor Vachter?
Victor Vachter. The fumes were so strong on the scene that four of the firefighters had to be treated for exposure. EPA specialists arrived to deal with the chemicals. They spent most of the day disposing of open containers of acid and other deadly compounds. And then just after 5 p.m., which means they'd been working on this truck all day, they found the body in a plastic bag stuffed in between things of chemicals in the back
of
the truck.
So the truck belonged to this pest company, which operates out of a home, but the body itself was in the truck.
Yeah. I'm not sure. And they don't actually explain why the man and the kid were in the truck. I'm assuming maybe he was the pest control guy. But anyway, the line has been disconnected to the pest control company, so they couldn't get any more information on this. But
sounds like pest may have had a broader sense for these guys.
A spokesman for the police department told a local newspaper, it's not pretty inside that truck.
No. I mean, and what size truck are we talking about here? Because it seems like if there's barrels of chemicals and jars of acid and also like a dead guy stuffed in there that they took 9 hours to find.
Yeah, it's at a maroon pickup truck, so I don't know.
It seems like they're driving the homeless man's rectum of pickup trucks, really, because there's a great number of things stored in there, and it seems like the inventorying of those items took quite some time.
Well, Patrick worked for one of the pest control companies here locally for a while, and you know, they fit out those trucks with these big, you know, backs on them with doors and containers and places to put things and stash stuff. So you can fit a lot of stuff in one of those trucks once they get it outfitted as an actual pest control truck. So
are we talking about an actual truck here when you say you can fit a lot of stuff into one truck?
Yes. We're talking about an actual truck.
Wanted to make sure that we weren't back on something else. Okay.
We're not talking about the sandproof van again.
Okay. Here's your corpse watch.
I'm digging up bones.
Now, you and I were on two different pages just
okay.
now.
Okay. Yeah, I did. Exhuming
things that's better. Don't worry about it.
You're a mystery to me sometimes, Rick Emerson. A mystery, I say.
Resurrecting memories of love that's dead and
what did you mean?
It's not important. Don't worry about it.
Was it like a butt reference?
No. Yes. Oh. You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. Coming up later on, Mr. Aaron Durham, the Weekend Geek, also our good friend Siegfried, will be here to talk about the Portland International Film Festival. So that was your Corpse Watch still to come, Penis Watch, Taser Watch, and Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week here in just a few. Here is Don Taylor.
Entertainer Janet Jackson sat down with Piers Morgan for an interview that aired on Tuesday night. She spoke about her struggles with weight and body image over the years, her relationship with her father, and the passing of her brother Michael. She also told Morgan that she did not have high self-esteem.
There was a time when I was so down and felt.
Does Janet Jackson say everything as though she's on the verge of breaking down in tears? I have never heard her interviewed where she didn't sound as though she was just seconds away from turning on the waterworks.
Yeah, she was also interviewed by Meredith Vieira this week. And there's just something, very weird to me about, well, I mean, there's something weird about
something
all
weird,
of
but those
them.
Jacksons seem odd.
But there's just something, but yeah, she always has that where she has to speak very, very quietly.
Maybe,
like somebody's just going to,
because somebody's going to run into the room and beat her with a chair.
Yeah, because her dad's going to just pop out of the woodwork and just backhand her if she speaks above a certain volume or something.
Okay. Is it me or every time you see Joe Jackson, do you just wait for him to go like, hidey, 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 ho? I'm sorry. I don't know why. It's just that there's something. Uh-huh. I think it's because it's like during the Jackson funeral thing. It's like everywhere he went, he was in a pinstriped suit. And then he has like the pencil mustache. You know, the tiny little like porn store clerk mustache.
Yeah.
So I just,
it really, really drives me crazy when women speak in this quiet little little baby voice.
The talcum powder voice.
Yes. Yeah. It just drives me nuts.
In just a moment here, we'll be joined by Mr. Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week. I guess I should actually finish this clip. Yeah. Okay, so here's Janet Jackson.
There was a time when I was so down and felt so unattractive, and it lasted for a very, very long time, that I used to bang my head against the wall.
Well, maybe if you weren't having a guy like suck all of the fat out of your body and then inject it into different sections of your frame, you know, you wouldn't feel so weird looking. Janet Jackson is a girl. She's the definition of a girl who was once very, very legitimately pretty, mm-hmm. and now it just looks like some weird Tussauds figure of herself. But like after a good melting, you know. And I don't mean because she's gotten older. I mean it's because she's done that thing of like having all of the fat sucked out of her and then jammed like into her ass and her cheeks, and then the rest of her just looks all strange and angular.
I mean, she's not as scary looking as LaToya.
Well, nobody's
nobody is as scary looking as LaToya. LaToya made Michael look normal.
Yeah, but... I mean, and don't get me wrong. I mean, I know that there's issues in that family, clearly. But I mean, Janet is just. And then there was that whole period where, like, she couldn't sing a song without talking about she wanted to be flogged or something, and it was just all very creepy.
Speaking of her father, Janet Jackson says he did his best.
I think my father means well.
Did his best, but occasionally they would just hide and they couldn't be found.
I think my father means well. I think he means well. And wants nothing but the best for his kids. I just think that the way he went about certain things wasn't the best way.
Yeah, like the beating and the screaming.
I saw this when the Jackson family was on Oprah recently, and she was talking to Joe Jackson, and he kept parsing like Clinton style. He kept trying to make this distinction between beating and whipping. And he said, "Well, I beat my children, but I never whipped them." And he said, and they were like, that was like the talking point that apparently he and his lawyers had come up with, or that he had just decided was going to like that was going to get him through the narrows of public opinion, was drawing the distinction between beating, hitting, and whipping, because he'd do the first two, but not the last, because that's right. Abuse.
Because the last one is wrong.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think we got one more cut.
Yeah.
Here.
This is her saying that yes, again, he meant well, but he didn't really know how to be a father.
Went about certain things, wasn't. The best way, but it you know, it got the job done, and that's because of maybe how he was raised, doing what he thought was best, not knowing any better.
Well, yeah, it got the job done.
Okay,
no. You say the same thing about slavery too. it got crap done.
I wasn't gonna build the White House myself.
Yeah.
Okay. Somewhere in some alternate universe, you were probably a marketing executive and did a really, really crackerjack job. No pun intended. You're listening to the Rick Emerson. Slavery gets the job done. You're listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. It is 503-555-6964 with like a little sunburst logo up in the corner. Now, 20% faster. Well, this is awkward. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson radio program from Willamette Week, screen editor and stylish man of the world, Mr. Aaron Mesh. Hello, sir.
Well, good afternoon, Rick.
How are you on this fine Wednesday?
I'm enjoying the sunshine from a distance.
I have to. Well, first of all, is there sun? Wow! Oh my God! Oh. I just felt like angel. I just opened the thick black curtains here in the studio, and the sun came in like a hateful golden ray of pain. So the beer and was it beer, music, and film, or just beer and film? The Beer, Music, and Film Festival
is called Beer and Movie, Rick.
There's no music.
Bam! That's bam!
All of the films are silent with no sound whatsoever.
Just the sound of happy guzzling. That's what's going on right now. So
it's beer and movie, and we actually started about 3 weeks ago, beginning with Portlandia screenings at the Mission Theater.
And so it's an ongoing thing. And what is happening right now? What is on the horizon for that?
Well. What's a lot of fun is we start this Friday with our sci-fi and fantasy movie showcase at the Academy Theater out on Southeast Stark. So it's six movies, and they are Ghostbusters, They Live, The Neverending Story, The Fifth Element, Evil Dead 2, and what's the last one? Sorry, it's The Dark Crystal.
The Dark Crystal.
So a full week of six films, all of them sci-fi fantasy classics, showing in beautiful 35mm with lots of booze.
And is it one film per night? Is it just each night you
no,
go?
No, no, no. Every film showing every night.
Wow.
Looking at the entire...
I mean, that really is
It has turned into a temple of geek.
Really, that's going to be your best movie attendance dollar, right there. I mean, pound for pound. You go there and you almost don't need to. It's like storing films in your hump. Then you almost don't need to go to movies for the next 6 months. You'll be taken care of.
Pretty much. And I watched They Live again the other day, and I got to say, like, that movie holds up really, really well.
Well, so we were just talking about They Live. Dawn was actually making the statement that she felt that there was a bit of a renaissance going on with that film, that there was a whole different generation sort of discovering it. And I got to tell you that with They Live, that was a movie I remember seeing that in the theater and not knowing what to expect and just seeing it because it had Roddy Piper in it. And that was, John Carpenter, sure, but Roddy Piper was enough for me. And having no idea what I was walking into and then just coming out and just being floored by how great it was. And it really does hold up. I mean, it's a great, great film.
Yeah, and I'm really hoping that people will actually come out who haven't seen it and have no idea what it's really about other than just that it's some, movie about aliens with Roddy Piper. Because if they do, they're going to be greatly surprised by how much it's, like, completely influenced the culture at this point. Like, Shepard Fairey owes his entire career to this movie.
Well, and I've talked to people about it, and I say, have you seen They Live? And they say, no. And I say, what's that? And I say, well, it's this great movie from John Carpenter, which itself is such a loaded statement at this point because it's like his batting average is not all that great. And I say, with Roddy Piper. And then I immediately realize that I have to – the window in their mind of consideration for the film is closing, and I have to try to convince them to see it before they just rule it out based on Roddy Piper's presence. In it. The other thing about that movie is it's got who is the and I remember I can't remember her name the female lead in They Live. It's that woman with the strange, like, weird crystalline eyes.
Yeah, she has those, like, those blue eyes that seem to be for another planet thing going on.
Yeah.
And what is her name? I'm in front of a computer. I can look this up.
It really is an exceptional it's an exceptional film, though. And if anybody has not seen They Live, which is directed by and written and directed by John Carpenter, starring Roddy Piper, came out, I believe, in 1989. It really is it is something you ought to see. It is
it's Meg Foster.
Meg Foster,
who I guess has been in other things, but I always remember her as being in that film. And They Live also is famous for featuring the longest fist fight in Hollywood history.
It's 6 minutes long, and South Park parodied it a few years back because it's one of those fight scenes that just doesn't end. It's in an alleyway, and it's over whether or not one of the characters will choose to wear sunglasses or not.
And I got to tell you, there's
it goes on for almost 7 full minutes, and the only dialogue are grunts and cursing.
And I think occasionally people are going, put him on! And then Keith David just starts to slug him in the face again. And there is no movie that is not improved by the presence of Keith David, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you go back and you look at your, let's say, your Spawn animated series on HBO, made watchable almost solely by the presence of Keith David, who then turns up as the creepy Maid Marian guy in Requiem for a Dream. So that guy is, it really is a stellar film. How long is the whole festival going on? So that's this week's lineup. How long does it just roll on for eternity?
We're going through April. And we're going to revisit after that whether we keep going from there. If we build enough momentum, we actually may keep showing stuff all the way through the summer. But for the moment, we're continuing through April. We got stuff going at the Laurelhurst starting next week. Some really good stuff, actually. We've got a film called Vengeance, which is a Johnny Toe film out of Hong Kong, which never got released in Portland, oddly enough, this last year, even though I think it's one of the best films that came out last year.
Now, is Vengeance isn't part of that trilogy, like the Sympathy for Lady Vengeance?
It's not part of the Vengeance trilogy, which is South Korean, but it's from the same director who did Triad, Election, and Exiled. He makes Hong Kong mafia movies.
All right, okay.
Which I guess are called Triad movies.
And the last...
They owe a big debt to John Woo, but I think they're actually better than a lot of John Woo stuff.
The last time you were here, we were talking about the website for this, and I think it had actually not gone online at that point, and it has now. What is the what's the URL for the festival?
It is BAMFestPDX.com, and we are live now.
BAMFestPDX.com. Awesome. Excellent. Fantastic. And then we're going to talk a little bit more about this later on the show, but the Portland International Film Festival is happening as well.
Yeah, and it's a great – this is – I say this every year, but February is the best month of the year for people who love movies in Portland. This is a cinephile's delight. So this year, PIFF, as usual, has something around 71 feature films showing, which is just really impressive. And some of them this year are really, really good. There's a new PIFF After Dark series, which is genre films. And this week that includes Rubber, about a killer tire.
Okay, here's the thing about Don hasn't seen the trailer for Rubber, and I'm actually going to post it on the net. Have I sent that to you? Okay, you're going to watch it later on, and I'm actually going to have you probably – I'll probably watch it like actually sort of on the air, and then I'll post it so people can watch it. I don't want to give anything else away about it except to say that our friend Siegfried, who's going to be on the show later today, forcibly, he did everything but like at gunpoint make me sit down and watch this trailer last week, because he said he described it as being the best trailer he'd ever seen for a thing that he couldn't believe actually existed. And I had no idea what he was talking about until I watched it, and then it just blew my mind. So I am all over that, my friend. And then a long silence ensued.
Sorry, I wasn't sure if you were asking me a question there.
No, I was just sort of trailing off elliptically. I will say that I know that you're busy, and we got tons of stuff going on this end as well. So I will say that the website is BAMFestPDX, that is BAMFEST, PDX.com, and that's going through April. And the lineup for the next round of this is, once again, it's Dark Crystal, They Live, Evil Dead 2,
The original Ghostbusters, The Neverending Story, The Fifth Element, and The Dark Crystal.
All right.
That's the entirety.
Excellent. There you go. So, and where do you come down on the big Fifth Element Demolition Man question?
I'm a Fifth Element guy.
Okay, fair enough. That's become the thing that we just ask everybody when they come into the studio now. So, all right, I'll put you down on the Fifth Element column. You can read them in print. Willamette Week or online at wweek.com. That is online at wweek.com or in print in Willamette Week. And Aaron Mesh, did you have – I just cut you off there accidentally. Did you say, have a final thought?
My final thought is just that if you don't go to the movies somewhere in the next week, either at BAM or PIFF or somewhere else, then honestly, you don't deserve to go to the movies at all.
And you should probably just take your life out of simple shame.
Well, that's Not an overreaction, I don't.
Excellent. Read them in print, Willamette Week, or online at wweek.com. Mr. Aaron Mesh, screen editor. Thank you, my friend. We will talk to you next week, I believe. That is Aaron Mesh. There you go. All right. Let's see. So where's the – there we go. And the – there we go. It's 503-505-6964. That is 503-505-6964. Let's do one more. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll do Week in Geek. We've got Siegfried, who's going to be here in a few, and we'll do the clue number 3 for the EH vending name, that snack contest.
Okay. Borders has filed for bankruptcy protection and will close nearly a third of its 642 stores in coming weeks. The book chain announced this on their website this morning. It has become increasingly clear that in light of the environment of curtailed customer spending and the company's lack of liquidity, Borders Group does not have the capital resources it needs to be a viable competitor, they said. The company has been struggling to stay afloat in recent years, though management assured readers that business will continue as normal. They also warned that the company will be closing underperforming stores within the network over the next several weeks. As internet book selling takes up a larger part of the market, Borders' worst mistake may have been its decision to opt out of online sales, according to the Washington Post. Borders only opened its own online bookstore in 2008 and recently started closing underperforming stores.
How is it possible that they opened an online store in 2008?
I don't know. Yeah, no, it was they lagged horribly behind on that.
That doesn't really do justice to the state. Saying they lagged horribly is a kind way of putting it. How is that? I had no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I had no idea because I guess by definition, it's sort of, it's like I wasn't aware of it because it didn't exist. So I wasn't aware of the lack of it because it didn't exist. And I like everybody else, I just sort of default to Powell's. And if it's not there, then I go to Amazon or something. But 2008?
2008.
Were they just thinking that it was not? It was just a phase
fluke.
We were going through. That it was
this
just some sort of a fad,
thing?
or did they feel like they just didn't have a business model, or it was going to be money losing to go up against Amazon or something?
Honestly, they may have just thought that being a brick and mortar store was a completely different business model than something like Amazon.
Well, it is.
That they would still hold on to that niche.
Wow. All right.
I don't know.
I don't know. That.
But like the borders here downtown closed.
Did it? The one on 3rd?
Mm-hmm.
When did that happen?
if it hasn't completely shut its doors, it's been in the works for a while there. A few weeks ago, there were signs in all their windows saying that they were having these huge 30% off sales and things like that because they were closing.
I see. I didn't know. I had no idea because I don't really since we don't work on First Avenue anymore. You know, and I don't have, you know, a lot of people dislike Borders and Barnes and Noble and whatever, and I think that has less to do with, I think that has more to do with people who just reflexively dislike corporations. Because I hate to see a bookstore of any kind close. That sucks a little, yeah. You know, that is sort of an unpleasant thing to me in any way. But the idea that they just so badly mishandled the online aspect, you almost don't deserve to stay in business if it never occurred to you to sell things online until 2 years ago.
And I know that, I've never bought anything online from Borders. The only time I've ever used Borders' website is to reserve something. Well, I don't know if I bought it and then picked it up, but to reserve something online and then go pick it up at the store.
Oh, by the way, here, this is perhaps a key to why they failed so badly. Before 2008, Borders had a deal with Amazon to send its customers to Amazon for internet purchases.
There you go.
That'd be like me just deciding if somebody asked me if they can listen to the show and I just send them to Lars. And then later I go, I don't know, it just doesn't seem to be working out for me. Well, go figure. Apparently, somebody sent me this email. It says, apparently, he says, they are also showing Heavy Metal. Now, I don't know if that means, that must mean the BAMP thing.
Yeah, probably not Borders.
You know why I'm thinking of music? Because I'm thinking, isn't that the Bay Area Music Festival or something?
Yeah.
The BAMP thing. So that's why I'm thinking of that. So yeah, they're also showing Heavy Metal, which here's a little thing, if I can just trade away a bit of my geek cred for everybody. I don't really like the movie Heavy Metal. I know that I'm supposed to, but I just don't. I'm just that is a movie that I have tried to like so many times, and I find myself incapable of taking it seriously.
Yeah.
And I know that it's not. I don't mean taking it seriously. You know, like thinking it's a documentary. But I mean, it's just the idea. I feel embarrassed when I watch Heavy Metal because it seems like a satire of a thing that dumb, horny sci-fi guys would watch when they were 15 and huffing paint thinner.
Yeah, it does. I've never heard for it either. But you know, if you say you don't like Heavy Metal, you get shouted.
Well, that's the thing. Is like you're it's like you lose all your cool points. But I just
I used to actually subscribe to Heavy Metal magazine. I used to read the magazine. I loved it. But no, the movie. No, it's not good.
I remember just like a friend of mine wanted me to watch.
It hasn't aged well.
No, it has not. And it just. It's not like it was made by it doesn't seem like it was made by hippies. I mean, even when I was a teenager and I watched it, I sensed that it's made by – it does have that stench of like mid-70s, like quasi – like sort of like – I don't want to say a National Lampoon vibe, but it does have that weird mid-70s coked out of your brain when everything seemed interesting and edgy even if it really wasn't kind of vibe going on with it.
And how we've occasionally discussed the whole thing of I have the occasional hole in my movie knowledge,
right?
Because there have over the years been the occasional movie that I've looked at from afar and said, oh, I won't like that.
I'm not going to be watching it.
And then never saw it. I've never seen The NeverEnding Story.
Really?
Really.
That's interesting.
I've never seen it.
It's a legitimate – NeverEnding Story is a good movie. And I don't know –
I've heard that, but I just look at it and there's just something about it that I think, ooh, that has unicorns, doesn't it? And then I've never seen it.
No. Well, it's got – and it's got Falcor. Children. And by the way, I hadn't watched NeverEnding Story for quite some time until I got our first dog, Max. And then what I heard from everybody is like, he looks just like Falcor. And which I went back and I watched it for the first time in probably 10 years, and he really does. And it does, when I say it holds up, I mean, you can tell when it was made, but it doesn't. But viewing it through that prism of, you know, sort of some of the outdated the visuals and whatever, it doesn't detract from the movie, in my opinion. I still give NeverEnding Story a strong thumbs up. By the way, somebody wants you to know. Yeah, I know that there are no unicorns in the NeverEnding Story, but I understand what you mean. Where you look at it and you just, you know, it seems on the surface.
It looks like a movie that should have unicorns in it.
It does. It looks like a thing that ought to have pixie dust sort of sprinkled over the entire thing. I get that. My thing about Heavy Metal, just my final thought, is just that I remember going over to it takes a lot to embarrass teenage boys because it's like you're spotty and greasy and, you know, and your penis is always disobeying you and, you know, whatever. Just everything is going wrong with your body and your brain when you're a teenager. For like 3.5 years, nothing works right. And if it does work right, it's at the wrong time. But I, so it's hard for teenage boys to feel awkwardness like above and beyond just what you feel every day, like as part of your existence. But I remember being called over, not called over, but going over to my friend's house. He's like, hey, I got this movie we should watch. You should come over. And I'm like, all right. And because he was like the guy that introduced me to like Blackadder and you know, whatever. And so he had, you know, he had pretty reasonable taste. And it's like he had a copy of Heavy Metal, which I think at that point he got in like a bootleg VHS because I don't think it had actually officially been released. And so it's like he knew a guy who had knew a guy and he had this grainy copy of Heavy Metal. And I said, what's this? And he goes, oh, it's called Heavy Metal. And I didn't really know what it was. And I think I'd seen the magazine, but I sort of assumed that it was like some sort of a music thing. And so he put it on. And it was like the first story is like the one about the cab driver who like, you know, zaps the girl in the back seat or whatever. And I remember thinking, well, this is sort of interesting. And then it's like they start having the cartoon sex. And that was when I mentally pulled the ripcord because I was like, it was so – it's like it was strange. It was like watching a sex scene with your parents where you get all awkward and uncomfortable about it. But it was like watching – and it wasn't done for comedic purposes. It was clearly done for purposes of eroticism. And so you're watching cartoon sex.
By French guys.
Yeah.
They're
with
crazy.
Like some, you know, some like teenage guy friend of yours. And then it just, yeah. you start to, it feels like you should be in one of those like single serving booths at the porn shop or something. It was all very weird. All right. Well, in any event, we should do something else. I will take a break here. We'll come back. And on the other side, we'll have our good friend Siegfried. Also, Taser Watch coming up. We'll have clue number three for this week's Name That Snack contest and more. We are moments away from the week in Geek. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. Stay right there, won't you please?
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Greetings, programs. Aaron Duran here with geekinthecity.com, and this is your week in Geek.
Yes.
First, good news for the users of Hulu Plus. Criterion will start streaming all of their painstakingly restored and culturally important films. Films like The 400 Blows, Fellini's 8.5, and The Rock. The bad news? It's Hulu Plus. No one watches Hulu Plus. It's like the Friendster of streaming movie services. Next, two quick little game-to-screen bits. First, media darling Felicia Day is taking a break from the guild to play Talis, a headstrong lady in the upcoming Dragon Age 2 web series. And sadly, we can all stop wishing for that Bioshock movie. Even though the game is rated M, studios want it PG, and Gore Verbinski won't shoot for anything under an R. Big Daddy is now Sad Panda.
Yes.
Finally, on Thursday, February 17th, Ground Control 3.0 arrives. After months of work and support, the new and stunningly improved Ground Control opens its doors at a 21 and over event from 5 p.m. till the quarters run out. Come on by and see why Ground Control is considered the greatest arcade in the world. I am Aaron Duran of geekinthecity.com, and that was your official and probably should have copywritten Week in Geek.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Down the line.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. Don't forget, coming up later on today, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, Don Taylor can be heard as part of Ham Fisted Radio, along with Bobby Fatboy Roberts at Cascadia.fm. Is it Cascadia.fm? Ham Fisted Radio coming up this afternoon, 4 p.m., and you can also hear that at HamFistedRadio.com later on. If you're not around to hear it, or if you're just too drunk to remember, you can hear it at HamFistedRadio.com. What is coming up with on the today's program? Or is it another sort of play-it-by-ear, laissez-faire, seat-of-the-pants, a fantastic festive giggles?
That indeed it will be. But also, I was pointed at a trailer for something called Dead Island, which is about
puppies,
bloodthirsty zombies killing a vacationing family.
Oh my God! So I forgot to have you watch the trailer for Rubber.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll have you when Siegfried gets here. I'll have it posted, and we'll all watch it together. It'll
okay.
be a bonding experience. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. Still to come, we've got your penis watch coming up. Also, a taser watch, and we'll do clue number 3 for this week's Name That Snack contest from E.H. Vending. And you can find out more about them by going to ehvending.com. Here is Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
In a 911 call a suspect made after the death of his roommate, a North Carolina man claimed he overdosed on cough medicine, causing him to kill his roommate and mutilate the body. At about 4 a.m., 19-year-old Michael Anderson called 911 saying he murdered his roommate, Stephen Starr, at the home they shared. In the call, the teenager told the 911 operator, "I did some things to his body that you don't want to see. You're not going to know who it is." Anderson is accused of shooting the 36-year-old Starr with a shotgun and a pistol and hitting him in the torso with an axe. Anderson also carved a word onto Starr's body, as well as writing on him with a pen. They said they didn't say what it was he wrote, but they said
he tried the pen first and then he found that it just didn't flow correctly.
Maybe. Or
it's all scratchy.
It was taking too long to do it with the knife.
He was having to do that thing of shaking it every now and again to get the ink down to
the
tip.
Well, the knife was just less efficient, and then he realized there was a Sharpie right there. So what was he thinking? They didn't say what it was he wrote on him, but said the writing could be considered a phrase. He was found in bed with the victim in what law enforcement has described as one of the most gruesome crime scenes they've seen in years.
And this is where?
This is North Carolina.
All right. And he's blaming it on cough syrup.
Well, here's the thing. He apparently he originally met the fellow when he went to a gay club because he said he's straight, but he was experimenting.
I was going to say, so he's gay, but apparently not. Don, I'm being rash there in my judgment.
He was a straight man who just happened to have sex with a man and then move in with him and be roommates with him. But he says he took some pills, some Mucinex DM, and he told the 911 operator, "I OD'd on Mucinex DM. Dextromethorphan makes me a little weird, and I took too many."
Now, that does make you hallucinate, but it seems like that. But it's also one of those things where you have to be like a lab rat where you're having like 2,000 bottles of it a week or something.
Yeah.
It seems like, here's my guess. My guess is that he's just flat out nuts and obviously in denial about certain aspects of his own personality, but had also at some point read a story or perhaps seen like an episode of ER where dextromethorphan made a guy freak out. And so he just figured, this will be my cover. I'll just blame. So it wasn't me, Your Honor. It was the NyQuil. And therefore, I am blameless.
Yeah, when he was on the phone with the 911 operator kept him on the phone while the police were on their way. And among the things he said were he explained himself, the roommate. He said, "I met him and went to his house and he took me in and I turned straight again. And he wanted to touch me and stuff, and I wouldn't let him, and he kept trying, and I waited until he went to sleep, and then I shot him 3 times."
Now, wait a minute.
"And I mutilated him very badly, and I'm sorry."
I don't understand, though, but they were roommates?
Yeah, he met him.
So this wasn't like a one, like he no. went home, because I was thinking, well, of course he turned straight immediately after they had sex. That's usually how that happens.
Right.
It's like how the chick turns ugly again. You go, oh no, I gotta go. I have a meeting in the morning. But this is where he was with him for some time, long enough to cohabitate.
Yes.
But then, quote, turned straight.
Right. And then the fellow kept wanting to have the gay sex.
As the gays do, Don.
And so he had apparently no other option than to shoot him with two different weapons and then mutilate him with an axe.
But I'm really intrigued by the whole, because, you know, there's a whole new acronym that has emerged now. Do you ever see something like, and it'll be like an acronym or a phrase or something, and you Google it or whatever? Well, it's like with the spaghetti cat thing, where you realize that it's been around for some time and you just sort of, you know, never stumbled across it.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, apparently, I guess it's more explainable than others, such as with this. In the New York Times, they were talking about MSMs, which I thought was mainstream media, or perhaps marble spam Mix-a-Lot, yeah, or something. But it apparently MSM is a term that has come into vogue, and that is men who have sex with men, and that is different from being gay.
Really?
This is a term of self-identification, mm-hmm, which I guess, you know, whatever. I don't care. Everybody's entitled. It's like I don't know the difference between gay and queer. And apparently there is a difference, because you will see, like, in support groups and, you know, film festivals and book sections, mm-hmm, where they'll talk about, like, gay, bi, lesbian, queer, trans, whatever. And I never know the difference between gay and queer.
And then there's genderqueer, which is something entirely different.
Genderqueer is where you believe yourself to be one thing even though your plumbing says you're another.
Yeah.
Isn't that like trapped in the body or whatever?
Sure.
I have always assumed that queer, as opposed to gay, that gay was sexuality and queer was like a political thing. That it was, it was an all-encompassing statement that went beyond your sexuality as such, and I don't want to say militant, but it was queer had an activist connotation to it. But the MSM. That is a term apparently used for men who have sex with men but who would not describe themselves as gay.
Right.
For reasons that I think are probably not too difficult to suss out.
Right. Yes. We live in a society where people are made to feel such self-loathing about themselves that they will murder the guy they're living with rather than admit that they're gay.
Yeah, it's all very weird.
He sounded distraught during the 911 call, by the way, but throughout it all, he was able to give the operator exact directions to the house, describing where to turn, how the house looked, and other details, including the green truck that was parked in the driveway. And then he said, "There's wood out there that I was chopping. I'm sorry, ma'am, but the axe is inside his stomach."
Like, so in case she wanted to be using it for something while she was there, she was going to have to give it a good sponging.
Yeah, he seemed to feel genuinely bad about the mess he had made.
Well,
but,
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's odd.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do our penis watch.
Here's your penis watch for Wednesday.
Take a look at my enormous penis. And my troubles start a melting away.
Bow, bow,
I take
bow,
a look at my enormous penis. And everything is going my way.
Bow, bow, bow.
Oh, by the way, in case you were curious, this message says, "Genderqueer is more like you're in flux, as I understand it, as the resident cross-dressing furry." This is my understanding. Like if you neither identify, he says, if you neither identify as a guy or a girl, you're just somewhere totally different. And then he followed it up by saying, "Furries are all about being the genderqueer, boy howdy." So,
boy howdy.
Yeah. When do we start spelling hi, H-A-I?
That's a computer thing.
I don't know. I understand that. I'm just saying, is that from something in particular, or is it just one of those things?
Is that from Lolcats?
I don't know. I mean, I sort of assume everything from Lolcats if I can't find any other point of derivation.
I always see that on, like, Lolcats. Oh, hi, I am inside your box, leaping at your face. Whatever.
Is that where the K-Thax Bi came from?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I don't know.
Here's the thing: is other countries must just think we're deeply stupid. Also, the aliens who inevitably will come here as sort of archaeologists and be excavating, they will believe that, not unlike the Egyptians, we just worship cats and put them on every computer screen in the country.
Oh, they'd be right.
Yeah, they really would.
Groveport, Madison, Ohio educator is on administrative leave after a student saw a picture of his penis on a school-owned iPad. The 11-year-old sixth grader was shocked when she saw the picture during a reading class Friday at Groveport Madison Middle School. And her mother, Stephanie Lunsford, the students were assigned iPads to use during class time. District officials said the incident's under investigation. Spokeswoman Chris Bowser would not confirm the educator's name, but the girl's mother said, it's librarian Robert LeBlanc. So she just said who it was. Without tying him to the case, officials confirmed yesterday that LeBlanc had been on paper.
LeBlanc,
like Matt LeBlanc.
I know, but I thought you said LeBlanc for a moment. Did I mishear the name the first time? Because I couldn't be that lucky.
So anyway, Lunsford said her daughter, Tanaya Marshall, told her what happened when she came home from school. Her daughter saw a personal message sent from LeBlanc to his wife that included a picture of his face and genitals. LeBlanc is listed as the school's librarian on the district website. Lunsford said there were four other students in the class who saw the picture before the iPad was turned over to the reading teacher. Lunsford said she went to the school herself Tuesday and was told the school had been notified by a reading teacher that had been given the iPad. He had an iPad. There was a picture of his penis on it. Someone accidentally saw it.
Are you okay? You seem a little frazzled the last 10 or 12 minutes. It seems like something has come apart somewhere in your head.
That's possible.
Has something in particular happened?
No, not really.
It's like you were sort of one way and then you became another way.
Yeah. I don't know. It just, it all just kind of went kablooey all of a sudden. Also, I'm deeply disappointed in that penis story. I've been holding on to that for a couple of days, and I thought that there was going to be more to it than someone just accidentally saw a penis somewhere.
Did you read it?
I read the very beginning of it, and it seemed like it was going to be...
Was that where you kept a secret? You kept it a secret from yourself?
Yes.
You said, I'll read the first sentence of this story and then hope that the rest of it is great.
I don't want to spoil it for myself.
Yeah. I might... I mean, maybe reading the whole thing.
Well, maybe.
From now on.
You sometimes you scan the beginning of something and 99% of the time you get the gist of it.
You think that this will go somewhere.
Yeah. And you look at it and you go, oh, this is a thing where the girl was given an iPad and there was a picture of the guy's penis on the iPad that he gave her to use. And
I guess my question would be, and I'm probably speaking for several people here, is what kind of a school is just giving you iPads?
Yeah, well,
and why didn't I get to go there or to some equivalent of that? Because it sounds like it was just sort of like they just sort of handed it out. Like, here you go, Johnny, here's your iPad.
The students are assigned iPads to use during class time.
Which is sort of awesome. I'm just saying I'm jealous I didn't have that. I'm intrigued by the phrase, and we talked a bit about this during Legion of News. I'm intrigued by the phrase, included a picture of his face and genitals. So is that like in one shot? Because that's either taken from far away or I'm picturing him bending down to get his face into the photo with his penis.
Or he's holding it like way far away at arm's length down here and then the penis is in the foreground so it looks even larger.
He's shooting it like Lenny Riefenstahl where he's just from underneath and it's like he is towering Olympiad style above the penis which is above the picture.
Or maybe the idea was that it would look like his face was like on top of the penis.
Look at me, I'm forced perspective with my penis.
Yeah, like Lord of the Rings.
It's exactly. Or like one of those photographs where it looks like you're holding a huge grasshopper. But it's really that it's just in front of the camera and you're pinching your fingers way off in the back.
It's like Lord of the Rings, only instead of like big Gandalf, it's big penis.
Okay.
And they're having tea.
Hey, since we're inside the penis watch, we should just, read this because it all sort of fits together, okay. So to speak. Listener John says, about MSM, which is men having sex with men, said, and this actually makes a lot of sense. I would embrace this this as the probable reason why that exists. He says, maybe MSM is guys that want to have, quote, the butt sex, end quote, or, whatever, with another guy, but don't want none of that kissing stuff because that's gay. The thing is that that immediately rings true with me. That immediately
really?
Resonates with me as true.
Really?
Because the number of guys – well, no, because this is the sort of thing that guys will – the guys will talk about as Kevin Smith would say, goofing on other guys. There's actually a sequence in The Wire – you may not have gotten to it yet – where Herc and Carver spend the better part of one episode – having the whole, like, well, if you had to have sex with another guy, who would it be? And Herc, like, resists the – he's like, I wouldn't do that. I'm not gay. I'm not going to have sex with a guy. And, so it's an entire episode long sort of thing of Carver trying to get Herc to come up with an answer, which is the sort of thing that guys do that I think women probably don't do to amuse themselves, like, late at night when everybody has consumed, their fair share of Heineken and Del Taco, those conversations sort of – they begin at a really, really loud volume level. But the number of guys, I think, who, if given the choice between – if given the choice between, let's say, having you know, just this full on sexual relations with another guy, or having some sort of sexual encounter with a guy, or having to like cuddle with a guy in a bearskin rug and kiss but not have sex, mm-hmm. I think most guys would opt for the sex. Cool. If you took the average dude off the street and you just said, so that's the difference, because I think guys find the whole – I think there are a lot of men who find the sexual element of being with another guy, that's a thing they can get with. They find mm-hmm. that interesting or compelling or exciting or tantalizing. Mm-hmm. But they are not just not interested in, they are in fact repulsed by the romantic element of it. And because they consider that to be – it's either off-putting or they consider that to be inappropriately feminine. So I think that's probably where the MSM thing comes from. It is the men who are divorced from the social aspects of being
gay, not even the social aspects, or bisexual.
It's not even the social aspects of it. It's the more emotionally intimate aspects of it. It's dating somebody as opposed to humping somebody.
Okay.
You're doing that thing again where I say stuff and then you just like, I can just hear the ellipses coming out of your head.
No, I'm just thinking because, you know, there are men who, honestly, there are men who feel that way about women too. They really don't like women and they don't really have any interest in talking to women or being friends with women, but they're physically attracted to women, so they want to hump them. And those men identify as straight because they want to have sex with women. The thing is, you know, how whatever your feelings are about a relationship, about what happens outside of the bedroom, if you want to have sex with someone of your same gender, you're either gay or you're bisexual.
You don't have to convince me. You just express some puzzlement at the term.
No, well, it's
doesn't matter to me.
It's just one of those really ridiculous and very sad sort of constructs where someone saying, "Well, I certainly like to have sex with men, but I'm not gay. I'm just a man who has sex with other men." Like, okay, sure. Call yourself whatever you want to call yourself. But, you know, you're not fooling us.
I'm really glad I brought this up. There's your penis watch for Wednesday. Rick Emerson radio program.
And my troubles start a-melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
So let's do this. Let's do one more. We'll take a break. We will come back on the other side with our good friend Siegfried. Also, clue number three for this week's Name That Snack Contest. On the way here is Don Taylor.
There is some controversy surrounding a rave that was recently approved for the L.A. Coliseum. This particular controversy is about a flyer created by the Public Health Department. The flyer warns rave attendees about the dangers of ecstasy and gives tips for staying safe, including warnings about taking ecstasy with other drugs. It advises ravers to stay hydrated and avoid driving, and suggests that they aim low in dose and frequency because ecstasy risks increase with larger doses. The flyer also warns that the only way to completely avoid the risks is to avoid doing the drug.
Is the thing that ecstasy actually dehydrates you, or that you just become, in other words, is it like a diuretic, or do you just is it just something where you're not aware of the fact that you're becoming dehydrated? Because there's that thing you always hear about, that's the big risk. That's what rave started stocking, like, just water and liquids by just, by the swimming pool load, because the kids were passing out from just becoming dehydrated.
I really don't know, because I know that there are drugs that give you that cotton mouthy thing and make you feel, you know, like, I mean, just actual prescription drugs that make you feel all dried out. But I don't know. I mean, I'm assuming that it can't. I don't see how it can dehydrate you.
Well, caffeine dehydrates you. So,
caffeine irritates the bladder and then makes you urinate more frequently, and that causes you to be dehydrated.
Yes, that's what I meant by dehydrated. That's your body ends up putting out more liquid than it's taking in.
I'm trying to...
It doesn't magically teleport it to another dimension, no. But if you have enough caffeine, you become dehydrated unless you compensate for it.
Well, I'm trying to work it out in my head to give you an answer. That's like, I think you may be right. It's like they go to a rave, they're dancing around, they're sweating a lot, but they're not drinking liquid, and that's why they become dehydrated. Not because the drug itself just magically evaporates all the water out of their system.
Would you like some pizza from the fridge? You know, it's shaped like a heart.
I'm just trying to have a discussion. What?
Okay.
I,
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We're going to do this. We'll come back on the other side. Siegfried will be here to talk about the Portland International Film Festival. Let's see what else we'll do. Clue number three for Name That Snack and Taser Watch all on the way as well. Stay right there. We'll be back after this. Go nowhere.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program, brought to you in part by Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com. That is 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. You're listening to this program right now, and you want to say thanks in the most tangible way possible. You can do it by patronizing our fine business partners and advertisers. If you find yourself building a house, constructing a house, moving into a new location with your business, multiplying the business, whether you're going to be installing, you're going to be updating, you're going to be repairing, or if you just want to make sure that the home you're moving into is as advertised, if the seller is not giving you a bill of goods, as they say, or if you got the inspector coming out to your place, you want to make sure you pass the first time so they didn't put that big like failing thing in the window, and then they got to come out a second time, and then you have to, you're paying through the nose for it, and then you're closed, and you're delayed, and then it becomes a whole self-escalating series of misadventures. You want to skip that right at the outset and go to the bottom line and get it done first and get it done right by contacting Squires Electric. That is 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. If it has to do with wires in your home, wires in your business, wires perhaps in your head, placed there by a man in black. Whatever it is you need to get maintained, updated, repaired, installed, or supervised, they can do it. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors in Portland for going on 13 years. They are Squires Electric. Find out more about them at SquiresElectric.com or 503-252-1609. That is 503-252-1609, SquiresElectric.com. Tell them you heard it here, won't you please?
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
Go! When everybody's let you down, all your friends are out of town. That's when we all come around. We're the crew, the coolies, yeah, yeah. You're a punk and you're a kid. Doesn't matter what you did, we can keep our records hit. You're a groovy goolie, yeah, yeah. G-R-O-O-V-I-E, G-H-O-U-L-I-E. Won't you come along with me? Be a groovy goolie, yeah, yeah. G-R-O-O-V-I-E, G-H-O-U-L-I-E. Won't you come along with me? You're a misfit, don't fit in. Motorhead, a Chapman chin. We don't care where you have been. You're a groovy ghoulie, yeah, yeah. It's up from Texas with a T. M-I-S-S-I-P-P. Idaho, Hawaii. You're a groovy ghoulie, yeah, yeah. G-R-O-O-V-I-E. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Emerson News Network.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. That is Rick at RickEmerson.com. Coming up later on, we've got clue number three for this week's Name That Snack contest. Oh, by the way, so I went to the Plaid Pantry last night, and they had actually sold out completely of the Hershey's Drops, which are the huge, the oversized, like, M&M style things. So I was going to bring those in today, but now I have to go somewhere else. I'm told they're at Walgreens.
I've never, ever even seen them.
They've just rolled them out. I bought them at Walgreens because at Walgreens, there's this thing they do when you're in line and you're standing at the cash register, and every day they feature a different snack or a different candy item. And they've got this deal where if they don't, which works out well for them, they got this deal that if they don't ask you if you'd like to buy them, then it's free. So it's like the whole thing at Denny's where if they don't give you a receipt or whatever, then like your meal is free, which no one ever points out because it's just awkward. But so I'm standing in line and the and the guy's ringing me up for my whatever at Walgreens, and he says, would you like to try some Hershey's Drops? And I said, indeed I would, because I'm so easily marketed to with any sort of novelty candy or some sort of snack that's been refashioned and put into a different shape. So I will, I got to track those down tonight and I will bring those in tomorrow.
I say no. Always, even if it's something I would be interested in, because I really dislike being upsold and I don't like them trying to force something on me that I didn't come to get. So even if it's like the most delicious thing in the world, if they say, would you like to buy this fabulous gold covered chocolate nugget? I came for eye drops and Band-Aids, damn it. No.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Our good friend Siegfried will join us here in just a moment to talk about the Portland International Film Festival. No, I wasn't saying you're in a bad mood, you understand?
No,
I wasn't,
no.
Like, making that claim. Just, but you have that, like, here's what you have going on right now. It's that, it's that thing where the, it's that thing, like, on a Mac where the ball is just sort of spinning. You get the little rainbow sort of, like, everything is taking three or four times as long to process. So I was wondering if you were at the end of your caffeine cycle.
No, but I will posit, though, that I have noticed something that happens on your end, that sometimes if I do, like lag a little bit, and I maybe disappoint you with a lack of clever, sometimes you will decide that I'm in that place, and then there's nothing I can do after that. You have just decided every time I don't just immediately snap back with the funny that, oh, Don's just pounding down. Don's power is like off.
That is true.
You know, you do project it a tad onto me.
And by that
and
is true.
And then I can't win.
I mean, that is true.
There's nothing I can do.
No, it's true. It's all is lost at that point, Don. Really, it's a zero-sum game. One is either on or one is off.
Then all I can do is just trudge sadly towards the end of the show with my head held down saying, yes, Mr. Emerson.
All you can do is wait for the morrow, Don. That really is, that's it. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor. No pressure.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
The directors of National Intelligence...
Not funny! Sorry.
Do you want me to do it in a funny accent? Will that make it more clever?
Put on a whimsical hat.
Do my funny French accent that always makes you smile.
Oh, the story you will not believe.
The directors of the National Intelligence. No, I can't do it now. Timing's all wrong. The FBI and the CIA testified at a Senate hearing Wednesday about global threats to the U.S. CIA Director Leo Panetta was asked about potential threats posed by the Muslim Brotherhood, a banned group in Egypt that announced this week it will apply to become a political party in Egypt.
In the Muslim Brotherhood, there are extremist elements that we have to pay attention to, and that's something we watch very closely to make sure that they are not able to exert their influence on the directions of governments in that region.
It's like the Brotherhood of Justice, but more swarthy.
I'm not sure where I heard this. I believe it was some comedian or other, but saying that the biggest problem is just adding the word brotherhood to the end of it. That just makes you sound sinister immediately. It'd be something like you could say, oh, look, bunny rabbits. But if they call themselves the Bunny Rabbit Brotherhood, it just immediately sounds like they're carrying knives and have bombs.
It sounds like they're part of the Name of the Rose.
Yeah.
Sort of in a basement with candles flogging each other with paddles.
There are shockwaves in the journalism community. Is this the same story? Yes, it is. Kind of. There are shockwaves in the journalism community.
You did a whole little thing there all by yourself.
I've got my own show going in
is
my
this,
head.
Could
Maybe
it be?
This is the
it
puzzle.
Is. Huzzah.
And the excitement for me continues. There are shockwaves in the journalism community following veteran CBS correspondent Laura Logan being brutally attacked in Cairo while covering the resignation of Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak. Judith Matloff is a former foreign correspondent and has known Logan for around 20 years. She commends the reporting on the attack.
Laura is very, very brave in being open about what happened to her, and I think it's going to blow the silence because this is not an isolated incident. This sort of thing actually happens far more frequently than editors realize, but usually women don't talk about it.
It's the creepiest story, too, and there's footage of not of the actual attack. I can't imagine that CBS would ever show it, but there's this CBS showed a frame from the report she was doing, and it was literally, it was from like 10 seconds before the attack happened. And it's weird because it's like they just, because she's in the midst of, you know, the protesters were there ostensibly to bring democracy and freedom to Egypt. But if you look at the shot, she's in the middle, she's doing a stand up in front of the camera, and then there's just this sea of protesters all around her. And of course, they're all men because, you know, it's Egypt and women are at home minding their own business and sweeping and whatnot knowing their place. And so it's just this it is just this ocean of guys. And she's right in the middle of it. And apparently it was like 10 seconds after that she was the victim of this assault. But to her credit, she actually put out a statement this morning. I don't think she was interviewed on camera, but she put out a statement this morning basically saying that she was going to get back on the job as quickly as possible. And She's not going to take any more time off than is medically necessary, and that she's sort of as a point of principle, she's not going to let it stop her from going back. So
that's because she was brutalized. I mean, she really was.
Well, so. I mean, it was sort of an extended, and it was for a prolonged period of time, and it was at one point they said, and I think the actual group that came along and sort of stopped the whole thing, it was a group of 20 women that sort of came upon her, because the men, amazingly enough, didn't seem to view it as a big problem. Forward thinking country that it is. Sorry, here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our snuff watch, and I think this would be a fine way to bring Mr. Seeliger
let's bring our good friend Siegfried onto the show right now. I'll ask right now, you didn't hear, here's why, because you probably didn't hear the beginning of the program. So every day we start the show with a clip from a film, we have a speech, we have a movie sequence. So there's a little snuff watch we're going to get to in just a second, and
I'm glad that I'm being brought upon with a snuff watch. That's
it's,
right.
No, but here's, it all ties together.
It all ties together.
So I will just play this. I will play this this is the speech that we began the program with, and then we'll go right into the snuff watch, and you'll see why it all is of a piece, as they say.
All the pomp and panoply of a legendary era is breathtakingly revealed before your unbelieving eyes as Entertainment Ventures Incorporated, mighty monarch of the exploitation film world, proudly presents the epical event in adult motion pictures, the long, swift sword of Siegfried. We love our legends and our heroes. Nevertheless, we suspect that when they weren't out slaying those stupid, clumsy, fire-breathing dragons, the good and glorious knights of old climbed out of their cast-iron jumpsuits and perhaps did a little number with the available local pussycats. But we sure can't censure them for that. Not the way it all hangs out nowadays. So we'll sing of Siegfried and tell it like it is. Or was. And how we'd like to think it was, because it was more fun that way. These four screen luminaries head an international cast of thousands in the first multi-million dollar adult super spectacle, The Long Swift Sword of Siegfried. Words cannot describe its magnitude.
Off-road.
The long, swift sword of Siegfried.
Here is your snuff watch for Wednesday.
Die, die.
is Don Taylor with your Snuffwatch.
David F. Friedman, the godfather of B-movie gore, who produced 1963's Blood Feast and, of course, The Erotic Adventures of Zorro, has died. He was 87. Friedman died Monday of heart failure at a nursing home in Anniston, Alabama. It's hard to think of anybody who was more important to exploitation films, said Eric Schaefer, who's a filmmaker and a professor at Boston's Emerson College. He was a link to the old roadshow days of exploitation that began in the 1920s and obviously was a crucial producer. As longtime chairman of the board of the Adult Film Association of America, Friedman also was a constant champion of the rights of adults to see adult material. He was a former carnival barker, made a series of sexploitation films with director Herschel Gordon Lewis in the early 1960s, known as Nudie Cuties, that promised a glimpse of the taboo. The secret of my stuff was the old carnival tease, Friedman told The Times in 2002. The audience would think, oh boy, we didn't see it this week, but next week. They never did see it, and they kept coming back.
So this is, by the way, you know that a movie's going to be good when it's produced by a guy named Herschel. Because let me tell you, that is a guy with a keen understanding of what
Americans
are paying for.
Especially Herschel Gordon Lewis. He's...
So this is a good time to ask you, Siegfried Sobey, because you are a man, you know stuff, you're smart. But these weren't actual, like, they weren't like full-on porn films, but they weren't like regular just B-movies because they had a little bit of a titillation. But were they like softcore or were they, because I've never seen The Erotic Adventures of Zorro. I've seen the trailer, which is about 7 minutes long, like 100 times because it's glorious, but I've never seen the full-length thing, so I actually don't know. To what extent movies like this were.
Yeah, it's like, the buxom beauties, see them here. You know, it's that sort of thing. But, I mean, the, like, Blood Feast, I mean, it's poppy exploitation, but it is the root of all exploitation films. And those type of movies are really, really great. I mean, it's kind of like, I want to say if... it's a time period of like Ed Wood, but if Ed Wood did like a really good movie.
Blood like, Feast, I think is actually one of the only movies on this list that I've seen from Friedman, because I was I dated this girl years ago who's a huge just fan of like B movies and you know, and sort of old school kind of exploitation films, and like one of our very first dates or whatever, she like brought me over to her house and she had some old VHS like dub of Blood. It was a double bill of Blood Feast and Blood Sucking Freaks which ends I think with them like literally drinking a guy's blood through a straw out of his brain, a guy who looks a lot like Jim Carrey. So I think that's the only film of his that I've seen.
I think Anchor Bay came out with like a DVD collection like about like 6 or 7 years ago, and it was just of all those films, and it was a really – I think it's Anchor Bay. It's one of those DVD companies that fantastic like companion piece like put together, and it was it's really, really well done. And
so was he comparable to a guy like Roger Corman?
Yeah, I would say I would put in like the same layer as Roger Corman. And some of the films I kind of enjoy more than – some like Roger Corman, Death Race. I love that. I love that kind of that one. But and then like that Frankenstein movie in the '80s of Roger Corman. But this is early kind of like this is kind of yeah Roger Corman in early years is what like Blood Feast is kind of those type of movies kind of dealt with.
I've never seen Blood Feast, but I have seen 2000 Maniacs, which he also produced, and it was the same sort of thing. He's one of those guys, kind of like John Goodman's character in Matinee, who sort of realized that the movies he was making were crap, but he would put so much creativity into the trailers because he knew that really what he needed to do was just get the people to buy the tickets and get them into the theater.
Excellently phrased, yeah. I mean, that's exactly what it is.
Then it's like the payoff is never really what you anticipate it being, but that doesn't really matter because once they realize the payoff is insubstantial, then it's like you've already got their money.
Right.
So is this – and where were they showing movies like this? Because they weren't showing them at like regular like porn houses, but they probably weren't showing them at regular theaters either. So if you – a guy who made movies like this –
That was, I mean, these are like the grindhouse. This is the start of the kind of grindhouse movies. I mean, they would be because you had television, which was so in the 50s was so schmaltzy and, you know, Leave It to Beaver and all those kind of sort of things. You needed some place to let go, and you would go and, you know, you want to go. Go to a movie to take your date to, so you want to go see a horror movie or something of that sort. So you would try to find these one movies that would play the movies in 1 week in one theater and then go to another city. And they would go for a year-long time, almost like what Kevin Smith is doing with his
– Red State.
Yeah, with Red State. That's pretty much the identical program that they used to do with old movies then. They would just take them to town to town to town.
And it was literally like one print in like the guy's trunk, and he would just take it to a theater and they would show it for like a week or whatever, and then he would just pack it up and go to the next city.
Exactly.
So – and is that what Smith's doing with Red State? Is it going to be like a whole – like a weird – like almost a tour of the movie?
Yeah, I believe wasn't like next 2 weeks or so. It starts at like New York, and then he's slowly coming around. And I don't think he comes here till comes to Seattle, and I probably he'll do a date here, of course, because he's pretty welcomed here in Portland. I think it's like in May or June or something like that. So
there you go. So the guy behind the Erotic Adventures of Zorro and the Long Swift Sword of Siegfried. So Mr. David F. Freeman.
I haven't seen that one. I got to check that one out.
I got the trailer if you want to watch it. I have a whole. I actually have. It's not like I'm not a collector in the sense that I don't go to like, you know, film trailer swap meets or whatever. But I do whenever I find a DVD or a collection or something that is on sale of trailers, I buy it because that's a thing that if for no other reason than that is a thing you can put on in any sort of social gathering. It doesn't matter. You know, if you got a bunch of people together and it's like they're trying to figure, you know, you're trying to figure out what to watch or what everybody can agree on. If you just put together a whole series of trailers, you know, of one genre or another, that is a thing that any group of people, any room full of people will be amused by. I've actually got, speaking of Lawrence Woolsey, which is the character that Goodman plays in Matinee, pitching the film Mant, I have a whole DVD of William Castle trailers, which is great, where it's like, you know, where it's like the Tingler and all of those Castle things where it's like he would, you know, in not Rumble-Rama, that was the thing in Matinee, but it was, what was it? Was it Rumble-Rama? What was the thing that you and Chris Witherspoon were talking about?
Sensor-Round.
Sensor-Round, which is where like...
Which was basically a later version of Rumble-Rama. It's the same thing. They just basically crank the speakers up really high and like turn up the bass.
Yeah, I think it was used on Earthquake and Roller Coaster. Roller Coaster, fantastic.
Yeah. Dirk Siegel.
Yeah, that movie, and it's got a young Helen Hunt and the power of the music of Sparks in it. Wow.
This is from 1970.
Yeah, it's pretty much Speed on a Roller Coaster is the setup, and it's quite terrible. But it's fantastic.
Actually rather than just I won't even bother to close out the Snuffwatch right now because we're sort of into this. So this is a good time to talk about the Portland International Film Festival.
So this weekend is the Portland International Film Festival, and most of the time they've been around for almost 34 years or so, I've worked with them off and on as a projectionist for their and I used to watch a lot of their movies and some of them good and some of them not so good, but Grindhouse is kind of helping program this Portland International Film Festival, and this week we've been doing a little bit different programming compared to what the Portland International Film Festival used to be, which was kind of a you know, very interesting films, but kind of a snore fest. And so this year we got some films a little different. One this Friday and showing at 11:30 at the Hollywood, bizarrely enough, at the Hollywood Theater, is going to be Rubber, and it's a fantastic film about a tire that has the ability to make people's heads explode.
And I'm putting it on I'm putting it at rickemersonshow.com. It's going to be there in like 5 seconds.
The trailer, the teaser's so much better.
Do you feel like I should? Okay, then I'll have to go back and edit it all because I've actually got the full trailer up there.
Okay. Yeah, but
It's going to be posted there in like 10 seconds to be able to see it. But it is unless you think that the Siegfried is speaking in metaphors or if he's just that you're using some sort of code or, you know, what,
no.
It is literally a tire like a Goodyear like a radial tire off your car, not attached to anything. It doesn't even have a hub. It's not on a vehicle of any kind. It's just a rubber tire.
Is it a sentient tire?
It just
it has become self-aware.
I haven't really seen just based on the trailer, it is evil or malevolent in some way. The tire will just get within proximity of somebody and then vibrate for a while, and then whatever the person or the thing it's looking at just explodes.
Boof. Yeah.
Yeah, they just blow up.
So, I mean, you used to – like Portland International Film Festival, it's a great film festival. But, I mean, it's a different sort of crowd. And so this one, it's a little bit different. It used to be you get the French films. Now it's – it's more explosions, more, you know, we're doing a little bit different programming for this year. So we have Rubber on Friday night, Outrage, which was Takeshi Kitano. He's the guy from the Blind Sword Master movie. Zatoichi.
No, Zatoichi.
Yeah, fantastic actor. And of course, my favorite movie, Battle Royale. He's the gentleman in that, the first Battle Royale, not two, but oh my gosh, he's really good. And then the next week we have a couple films showing at the Cinema 21, the late night programming for like 11:30 at night, and they're really great. And so I know, like, Friday, it's probably going to be snowing. You're going to be tired because Obama's in town.
Obama. Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
I don't know.
Sorry.
Like, traffic's going to be bad, snow, all that stuff.
When Obama's in town, it just drains all of the energy out of all of us.
Yes, all that beer and smell of Portland people. I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about. Anyway, so to make a long story short, too late. It's such a great movie. If there's a snowstorm and you have to run your car into like an embankment, this movie, and you die, this movie would be worth to go see.
Rubber?
Rubber at 11:30.
I should say, by the way, that the trailer is now up at rickemersonshow.com. Apparently the LA Weekly refers to it as being bat-ass wonderful. The New York Times has given it a glowing endorsement as well. That's Rubber. The trailer is up at rickemersonshow.com. That is rickemersonshow.com. I finally put my finger on what it's like when we have you on the show. I've been having you on various incarnations of this program for like 5, 6, 7 years. I couldn't quite place why it always sounded so familiar is the wrong way to put it, but I always felt like I was sort of
badass crazy.
No, I was viewing the show from a third person perspective, and I was trying to figure out, why does this show, when Siegfried's on, suddenly start to remind me of something else? And you know what it is? You Alias fans in the house, you're like a film version of Marshall, the tech guy who's always like presenting like the devices that they're going to be using for that week's caper. And he's saying, and this is so like a, this is a piece of electronics that you wear in your eyeglasses. And what it'll do is it'll actually it'll replicate the retinal surface of the person that you're talking to. And you have almost exactly the same cadence and delivery as the tech guy from Alias occasionally when you're talking about films. That's why it was always so – it was like an echo of a thing I couldn't quite place.
Okay.
It's not a bad thing. I'm just saying it's almost uncanny now that I've thought about it.
I have to check it out. I haven't watched Alias. That's all.
I'm just saying. It's just that was a little puzzle I was trying to figure out in my head. Lo these many years.
I just wish that that someone like you had been involved with the Portland International Film Festival when I was a film critic here in town and had to cover it every year.
Oh yeah.
And had to go in the afternoon and sit there with all of the Silver Circle members or whatever they are, who would all bring their lunch. So not only was I watching really, really boring movies from, you know, Norway, but it also smelled like people eating soup.
Well, I had to watch all those. So it's like, okay, so there would be like 90 movies of the Portland International Film Festival. I would have to watch 40 of them. And I got paid to watch them nonstop, and some of them were good, and some of them were just so terrible. Like, there was this one that was so mind-numbing. It was 30 minutes of a guy smoking. It was a French movie. I was like, oh, okay, French. It's going to be visually cool, so I'll dig it. And the tagline was, like, gentleman goes to work, comes home about his wife. His mom that dies and goes off to Venice. But the whole movie is 30 minutes of a guy smoking at an industrial waste plant, no dialogue. Then he goes to his mom's workbed or deathbed and there's like the doot, that kind of noise. He's smoking a cigarette in the room for 30 minutes while no dialogue. And then there's like 20 minutes in Venice of just the guy walking around, no dialogue. I wanted to shoot myself.
Was there a poll quote like somebody called it a stunning examination of human isolation and in the modern age?
The description was like, this is a lighthearted movie of a guy who works at industrial waste plant and goes and decides to go to Venice. And I'm like, this is just terrible.
And it really was where just a guy left the camera running for too long, and they said, we got to print it today. It goes out tomorrow.
And so I was there at the screening afterwards, and I came down and because I was doing the projection, I came down and I was like, okay, I want to see like what are people's reactions to this movie. And people were going out and they're like, that is so brilliant. Some people, they love that sort of thing. But we want to kind of, you know, change that. And And so that's why we have like these movies like kind of Rubber or Outrage.
Here's a silly question. So it's the Portland International Film Festival. Mm-hmm. So is it but it's obviously – but Rubber is clearly – I mean that's an American film. That's a film made here. And then I mean where do you get the most entries from?
Oh, from
where?
Like,
I mean, where? I mean, what country? I mean, you know, where? I mean, does the festival lean toward one part of the world, or you know, or another in terms of terms of film?
No, it's pretty. It just depends on what the movies come in, what the people are. What you have to. There's a little like you have to kind of do a little bargaining with the movies and what they want for ticket prices, what theaters they want to book it in, and so forth. So there's a little. Like a little bargaining going on for every movie, and so that depends on and what people want to do, like to kind of showcase their movie at the film festival. It's really kind of difficult to say how it's kind of put together, but yeah, it's to kind of answer your question. It's a lot of movies everywhere. So you got like Japan, you got North Korea, you got Kazakhstan, Afghanistan, Iraq. There's one submission this year, and some of those movies, you know. They it's kind of interesting to see the flow of like this year it's like a lot of like Indian and Iraq and kind of that kind of theme and you know if that's your thing you can go see it like right now I've kind of got a limit of that after watching you know Egypt for
you've
the
reached
past
your
2 weeks.
Saturation point
yeah,
of view
yeah.
So the Portland International Film Festival happens. So is it just this weekend, or is it this weekend and then ongoing?
It's been going on since last weekend, and it's all through the next 2 weeks till the 28th. It's going on. So
we'll have a link to that at rickemersonshow.com. Or right now, you can watch the trailer for the movie Rubber, which does look fantastic. By the way, here's the bit. I almost don't want to give it away, but there's that line, the line at the end of the trailer where there's these sort of it almost looks like one of those like Broken Lizard films or like the, you know the Reno 911 guys you know made a movie. And so I don't know anything about the collective that filmed this. I don't know who wrote it. I don't know anything about the director. His name is Quentin something or other.
You just see the trailer and you're like, I'm sold. You
now,
got
is this
my
a
money.
Feature film?
Feature film?
Oh, yeah, no,
yeah,
it's like
yeah.
An 85 minute film or something
yeah.
about a tire. And again,
and it's from it's French, but I believe part of it was filmed in America. Most of it was filmed in America.
It looks sort
America,
of southwestern.
But,
I mean, yeah. It looks like it has sort of an Arizona thing
and
going
it's
on.
English dialogue, but French director, and I think French. It's French made. It's
the best. So. There's the best moment of the entire trailer is after you've watched 2 minutes of again, literally a radial tire just sitting stationary, static in a shot. And then facing someone, and they'll do the thing of then focusing to the guy in the background. The tire will turn, vibrate a little bit, and then the guy's head will explode.
Yeah.
And at the end of the trailer, fantastic. The sheriff is just sort of giving everybody, he's like, this is what we're up against, people. You got to be on the lookout for this tire. We believe that the tire has killed several people. And then there's just the perfect beat. There's the perfect little pause. And then one of the deputies just says, is it black? And then they just go right to the title card. So, I mean, it really is just – it's wonderfully put together. And yeah. I didn't believe it was a real film. You had to convince me that it was an actual feature film.
Yeah. I was like – you hadn't heard about it. So I was like, oh, you must see it now.
Yeah. It's genius.
But I was trying – like last week there was an opening night gala and there was like – yeah, the kind of the silver-haired people – were there, and I was trying to, you know, talk to them because they were like, you know, if you spend enough money, you get to be part of the director's circle, and you get to see the screenings too. But I was trying to get them to see Rubber, and it was kind of an interesting experience. But I, you know, trying to explain the difference, they're like, I don't understand. So a lot of this international film festival, it's gonna kind of wreck people's minds, but the change
way.
Up, but it's in a good way. It's and I hope people enjoy it, even the silver hair crowd.
Let's do this. We got a taser watch. Let's get that done. We'll do our third clue this week for the Name That Snack contest, and then we will wrap it up. Don Taylor's going to be over at Ham-Fisted Radio with Bobby Fatboy Roberts. That's 4 p.m. Pacific time at Cascadia.fm, and then later on at HamFistedRadio.com. Here is your taser watch for Wednesday.
You got me right.
John Taylor with your Taser Watch.
Corpus Christi police had to shock a 300-pound man three times with a taser after he attacked a limo driver. Officers were called on Sunday at 3:54 a.m. When a limousine driver said one of her clients began to ransack the inside and kick out the windows. When she told him to get out of the car, he slammed the door on her twice before he fell out of the vehicle. Officers found the 300-pound man on the ground, and another man in his party was trying to get him to his feet. Officers said the man on the ground appeared to be too intoxicated to stand up. As officers tried to talk to the man, he became extremely violent and leapt to his feet, swinging at the officer. As the officer deployed his taser, the man quickly broke one of the probes and was hit with another taser. The man continued to attempt to assault the officers, and he was tasered a third time. Police were then able to handcuff the man and get him in a patrol car.
Now, I know we were talking about this earlier, but this does make me wonder if we are not creating, but if we are in fact discovering or bringing to the fore, by dint of the prevalence of these tasers, some extant fetish that was not that you really couldn't. You couldn't satisfy before now. So it's like a suicide by cop, but it's like a fetish indulgence by cop. Because, like, they'll sell, you know, like they like at the you go to the sex stores, they have that thing, the what's it called? The tens thing, where it's
unit.
The tens unit, which I think is for, like, you know, it's sort of like a vibrators or for, like, muscle relaxation. I think the tens unit is for relief. I think it's meant to be an electronic or an electric analgesic of sorts where you relieve muscle pain or whatever. But I think people really just wire up their junk because they find it to be a pleasing sensation, which is fine. But it's like those are expensive. And it's not like you can really rent one. But if you provoke a cop enough to that he has to tase you, I mean, even if you're having to pay your own bail, it's cheaper than going in the, you know, it's cheaper and less time consuming than trying to find somebody, you know, at a local emporium or dungeon type establishment that'll just, you know, that'll manacle you up and give you a good shocking.
I was thinking maybe we're creating a race of super criminals
that are impervious.
Well, yeah, the ones that, you know, that are readily tased get put in jail. But the guys that you tase repeatedly and then they still get away, you know, they aren't put away. So then they will breed with others. And then they will just sort of create this race of people who cannot be tased.
They have criminal children of their own, and then eventually
right.
they will be resistant and impervious in all ways to all manner of tasings, mm-hmm. regardless of how many. That I mentioned, by the way, so next month at some point, I think the second week of March, we're going to be having a police officer is going to be coming to the studio and talking to us all about – he's going to be giving us the A to Z, everything we want to know about tasing.
Is he going to tase you?
No. Well, there's three things. One, no. Two, no. Now, there's going to be a cop here coming to talk about tasing. We do have our friend Lyle, formerly of the Muddy River Nightmare Band, who actually went through his police training a few weeks back and was tased as part of that, and they filmed it. And I don't think we can actually put it on the website, but I think he's going to bring it here so we can watch it and we can describe it to people. I don't think he's allowed to actually post it anywhere public. It's the property of the police department. But he's going to let us view the video of him being tased, and then I swear to Christ we have a listener. Our listener Tom has volunteered to be tased for the program if we want him to be. And the answer, by the way, is yes.
Yeah.
Yes, we do. So that's yeah. So you can look forward to March just being a whole month of tasering oriented activities. It's it really is going to be a fantastic time to be alive. That's your taser watch for Wednesday.
You got me running, going out of my mind.
I didn't do it.
You got me thinking that I'm wasting my time.
Don't tase me, bro.
The Rick Emerson radio program. It's that time once again. Time for clue number three in this week's EH Vending Name That Snack contest. Brought to you by EH Vending. Find out more about them by going to ehvending.com, or you can call owner Josh at 360-816-1853 or James, the sales manager, at 503-897-8204. So if you are unhappy with your current vending provider, or if you work at a business, you work at some sort of a company or location where there are no vending machines, you find yourself having to leave the and really, I'm not even really talking to employees here. I'm really just talking to business owners. If you find that, you know, your employees are exercising some of that pesky free will and they're leaving the company for minutes at a time to try to satiate their hunger, you can avoid that by having a vending machine on premises stocked with all manner of delightful consumables. Do that by contacting EH Vending at ehvending.com or calling 360-816-1853. And if you're just starting up your company, if you only have one location, you find that vending companies don't want to work with you, or they have a minimum number of locations that you must have in order to do business with them, you want to contact EH Vending because they will circumvent those issues and they'll find something that works for you. Everything from traditional snack and soda machines to coffee service and beyond. So EHVending.com is the location. EHVending.com, the location online. Or you can also call them at 360-816-1853. Here is clue number three. And again, if you are the first person come Friday, once we give out the fifth clue to correctly identify the snack via snack at rickemerson.com, and win yourself a huge bag of stuff, of consumable wonder from EH Vending. Today's clue is surprise. That is today's clue, surprise. It's clue number three. Once Friday comes, we give a clue number five. If you're the first person to correctly identify the snack at snack@rickemerson.com, you will be this week's winner. That is brought to you by EH Vending. It's EHVending.com. Don Taylor is going to be over at Hamfist Radio, Cascadia.fm at 4 p.m. today, along with Bobby Fatboy Roberts. We want to thank our guests, including Mr. Siegfried from Portland International Film Festival and also
Grindhouse Film Festival.
Grindhouse Film Festival as well.
Mr. Siegfried.
With the sword,
I was trying to get a way to do the long swift sword, and I wasn't able to do it. Somebody asked if we're going to play the Erotic Adventures of Zorro trailer. We'll end the show with that here in just a second. Also, Aaron Mesh from Willamette Week, and don't forget to join us tomorrow when our guests will include Anna Griffin, columnist from The Oregonian. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic, by Mr. Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler, Chief of Staff Cheryl Kanakoa. After a brief musical interlude, we'll have an encore of today's Legion of News, followed by an encore of this very fine radio program. See you again tomorrow. It is Wednesday, February 16th, 2011, and that is The Frequency, Kenneth. As always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.
In times of tyranny, always comes one to right the wrong and wrong the unrighteous. Such a one was Zorro. It's an all-new, all-nude, lewd and lascivious Zorro. It's Entertainment Ventures' masterwork of adult exposition, The Erotic Adventures of Zorro. No kiddie matinee Zorro this. Here is a Zorro with balls.
What will you do next?
Next? I am getting laid.
The intrepid team that brought you Trader Horny now brings you a fantastic motion picture with something for everyone. Killing. Rape. Spectacle. Comedy. Sex. Flamenco dancing. Perversion. Horseback riding. Torture. Lesbians. Sword fighting. Naked girls. Entertainment. All in the audacious, outrageous, The Erotic Adventures of Zorro. Parental guidance recommended. Have your parents guide you to this theater to see The Erotic Adventures of Zorro. The first adult movie rated Z.